You can have a seat. Thanks, Ben. That was really great. Hello, everyone. Good to be with you again this morning. This morning, we're continuing with Mark 1, from verse 21. And and as you can see, it's a complicated sermon. It's all good. It's all good. There we go. Mark 1, verse 21 to 45. And let me just say, why do we make such a fuss of a Bible? What's the story of that? You know, there's many religions that is not logocentric as Christianity is. Logocentric meaning word-centered. Interesting enough, all three monotheistic religions, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity, has got a certain sacred scripture that it's really fixated upon, that it really focuses on, but really takes as a base of all things. A lot of other religions doesn't do that. Why is the Bible so important? I mean, we open a book, it's you know, the newest bit of it is almost 2,000 years old. The rest is older than that. I mean, you don't find medical advice 2,000 years and older. Why would you follow something that is so old? You know, is it outdated? Is it still, you know, important for today? Can we still use it today? What's the idea behind it? And here's the problem. The problem is beginning from ourselves, trying to understand what the world is and how things really are and who God is. There's much that we do not know. There's much that we do not know. Now, it reminds us of that old story of many blind people that came around the elephant. And one sort of touched a leg and he had an idea this is maybe a tree. This object in front of him is a tree. One touched the trunk of an elephant and said, well, maybe, you know, this is a snake. I don't know, what is it? You know, the other one would, you know, sort of touch the tusk and say something else about it. And that's exactly what we find in this world. So many people's got so many opinions about who God is based on their experience or their lack of experience of who God is. But ultimately, it takes somebody to give that revelation, to give that insight. And what happens in this classical story of the blind man with the elephant is that the ruler actually stands on top of a balcony and looks down at him and said to him, that's an elephant. And then the whole starts making sense. I think the same is true for us. What we should remember, beginning from ourselves, is much that we do not know. And that's okay. But ultimately, God gives us His Word so we can understand what is and how it works. And that's why the Bible is so important. And the fact that it's old does not detract from it. It actually adds to it. Because it's never been proven wrong. And I think that's important that we should mention that as well. It is not meant to be fashionable, it's meant to be true. It reminds me of some of the critics of Christianity. There was particularly one in France, where's my memory now, a philosopher that was quite involved with the French Revolution. And he believed, he stated critically that the Bible would not exist in 100 years from then. Today, his house where he lived, it is a Bible distribution point, which is sort of very interesting. But anyway, so let's continue this morning, and we're looking closer, like we've been doing every morning, just at a particular portion of Mark. And we're looking at where Jesus starts off his ministries, and it's ministry, and it says the following, and they went into Capernaum, and immediately on the Sabbath, he entered the synagogue and was teaching. And they were astonished at his teaching, for he taught them as one who had authority and not as the scribes. And immediately there was a man in their synagogue a man with an unclean spirit. And he cried out, what have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God. But Jesus rebuked him, saying, be silent and come out of him. And the unclean spirit, convulsing him and crying out with a loud voice, came out of him. And they were all amazed, so that they questioned among themselves, saying, what is this? A new teaching with authority. He commands even the unclean spirits, and they obey him. And at once his fame spread everywhere throughout all the surrounding region of Galilee. And immediately he left the synagogue. As you can see, we're going a bit further this morning. And immediately he left the synagogue and entered the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. Now Simon's mother-in-law lay ill with a fever, and immediately they told him about her.
And he came and took her by the hand and lifted her up. And the fever left her and she began to serve them. That evening at sundown, they brought to him all who were sick or oppressed by demons. And the whole city was gathered together at the door. And he healed many who were sick with various diseases and cast out many demons. And he would not permit the demons to speak because they knew him. And rising very early in the morning while it was still dark, he departed and went out to a desolate place. And there he prayed. And Simon and those who were with him searched for him. And they found him and said to him, "Everyone is looking for you." And he said to them, "Let us go on to the next towns, that I may preach there also, for that is why I came out." And he went throughout all Galilee, preaching in all in their synagogues and casting out demons. Now, two words that I'd like you to notice here, if we go to the next slide. There's a sense of urgency that we find all the time. There's a word that is repeated often. I'm glad you like it. Just to show you that in the office we don't just drink coffee and read the Bible. We also work out elaborate PowerPoints. Look at the next word, the word immediately. Now if we go to the next slide, immediately. Next one. Next slide. There you see the word again. Next slide. Right. Thank you. Now, now, if you go to the next word, it's the word authority. Alright? Two words that we find prevalent in this. Immediately and authority. Now let's look, if I can wow you again, to the next slide. Authority. Next one. There you see the word again. Next one. Authority. Next one. Now, let's keep it there for a moment. So two things that we find. Now, Jesus starts with his ministry. Where does he start it? He started in a village called Capernaum. Now, Capernaum was actually, in those days, not such an old village. It's about 200 years old at that stage. Initially, it was developed under the Asmoneans. Asmoneans, who were they? They were Maccabean kings that came in revolt against the Greek overlords that they had about 200, 300 years before Christ. And they took in the region of Galilee after a while, and they established some towns there. Now, this town was situated around the Sea of Galilee. Now, interesting enough, the word Capernaum, what does it refer to? Literally, it means the village of Nahum. Now, you might notice Nahum, he's a prophet in the Old Testament. One of those small books that always jumps around in the Bible when you're looking for him. It's always moving around. And what's the story of Nahum? If you go and read Nahum, it's actually a horrifying book to read in a certain sense. Because this guy, Nahum, he rejoices that the Assyrians were slain by the Babylonians. Because of his own people suffering at the hands of Assyrians. The Assyrians were exceptionally cruel, exceptionally violent people. They ruled absolutely through fear. Think of Nazi Germany, that plus more. That's the idea. So Nahum writes after the fall of the Assyrians, and he rejoices with the fact that they fall. Now, is it not interesting that this town is named after this prophet? Which means that these people were probably very politically minded. Now, in those days, we know at the time of Jesus, people really suffered under a heavy sense of taxation, tributes that they had to pay. Anything between 30 to 70% of their income was due to tax. And the town itself was not a wealthy town. It was poor people. They made their living out of fishing. And interesting enough, a boat has been found from this period that has been found in Galilee. It essentially sunk into the mud and was there for 2,000 years, and then they excavated it. And it took a massive effort, obviously, to excavate it and sort of put it in such a way that one could exhibit it in a museum, but they actually managed to do it. And it's very interesting. If you look at the boat, you can see the way in which they did things was very crude. The boat has been done and redone and redone and redone because these people obviously did not have resources just to build new boats. They had to scrounge and make do with whatever they had. The town itself was planned in such a way that it was very haphazard. Houses was built in a very haphazard way, but it was always centered around the family house. Interesting enough, we find that Jesus does most of his ministry in this village. Most of the time that he spends in this village. Peter and Simon comes from this village. The house in which Jesus did most of his ministry was in Peter's mother's house, whom he heals in this passage. By the way, that was one of the earliest churches. I've excavated the house as well and found that it was, you know, certainly one of the earliest churches that people made a pilgrimage to see and to experience for themselves. Now, is it not interesting that Jesus starts here with his ministry? It doesn't start with a place that seems to be the best, the biggest, the most influential. I would say he starts with a place that's got the biggest need. And if we read and we look at what happens, we see astounding stuff. He heals people. He casts out demons. In other words, he does freaky stuff that freaks us out. And I think the reality is that he goes to the place where the greatest need. And this I find a pattern again and again in the life of Jesus. Jesus goes always to the place with the greatest need. Now for us, that is hard. Because the place of the greatest need freaks me out and freaks you out. Am I right? Because the question is, when you come to the place of the greatest need, or the person of the greatest need, you say to yourself, what on earth can I do here? There's nothing I can change here. I can't do a bit of pop psychology. I can't give a verse for the day. I can't give a pat on the back and say everything will be okay and move on, because it's not enough. So we avoid it. But I think in the process we miss much of who Jesus is and what Jesus does. Now in saying this, I'm not only suggesting that where we should do most of our things is in the poorest of places. I'm not just saying that. I'm saying you won't have to go far before you meet great need. You find it in your family. And by this, by need, I don't just mean physical need as in financial need. I mean emotional need. I mean spiritual need. Relational need. There's many needs that people have that is dire often. You can find a person that is very well off. And some of the people that followed Jesus, a tax collector, for example, Matthew, was very well off. And yet the need that he had was very great. You don't have to go far. You only have to go to your workplace. And you will find somebody with great need. Now most of the times, what we do is we put a bit of a distance there because it's just too hard. What am I going to do here? What am I able to do here? Now, I place the emphasis on these two words because what we find with Jesus, number one, had a sense of urgency. The need is great. And one should respond to it. And I think equally, we should have that sense of urgency. Now, there's a reason you've been placed on this earth, in this time, in this place that you are. It is not accidental. Many times we wonder, why am I where I am? And we look at what is not so great about our situation. And obviously, sometimes we see what is really great about our situation. But I find rarely, I'm just speaking from my own heart, rarely do we actually understand why am I placed in this position? What am I supposed to do here? Because that makes all the difference. You see, having a sense of urgency is really important because if you can't see the need, you're not going to respond to it, you're not going to have urgency. But if you do see the need, you do have a sense of urgency. The second thing that goes with it is that authority that Jesus had. Now, authority is a very interesting word. Note that he doesn't use the word dynamic teaching. Who's this guy? He has dynamic teaching. No. He doesn't say powerful. No. Now those might be words that is applicable, words that, you know, might have fitted in here, but it's not the words that it used. It used the word authority. What is authority? And I think there's much that we miss here. Authority, obviously, number one, is ability to change things, right? Authority speaks of a certain sense of power, a certain ability to shift and to change what you find. Or else you wouldn't have authority. But that is not what makes authority so much different from other words like dynamic or powerful. What really makes a difference is the fact that authority is something that you receive that is not yours. Think about it. A traffic officer. He stands there in the road and says to you, stop. You stop. Why do you stop? He stopped because he's inherited a certain sense of authority that comes with his office as a traffic officer. Is it his own authority, his own ability? Does he have the physical power to stand there in front of your Hilux bucky and go like, "Sir"? No, you better drive over him if you want to, if you're really a nasty Christian. Alright? Is it because he woke up the morning and said, "What I'd really like to do is just stop cars randomly and ask people questions"? No, he's been appointed in a certain office, he has a certain job, and he has the power of the state behind him. In other words, he has authority. Now, it's very interesting if we look at the rest of the Gospels. There's one story that really agrees with it, and the story of the centurion that comes to Jesus and say to him, "If you want, if you can, I know you can heal my servant." And then Jesus says, "Okay, I'll come. I'll do it in person." And then the centurion, this military officer, says to him, "No, all you have to do is say the word, because I understand military authority, because I have men under me. If I say something, they do it, because that is the way authority works." And Jesus was astounded and he said, "I find no one like this with faith in all of Israel." And here's a point that I'm trying to make in a very elaborate way. When we come across need and we feel outdone, that's okay. Because the point isn't actually trying to change things by your own ability. Is it not funny how we understand in our own lives that there's much that we cannot change? We have to ask God, we have to trust in Jesus, we have to have faith in Jesus. But when it comes across to somebody else's need, we feel obligated that it's myself that needs to make a huge difference here. And what am I going to do now? Because I don't know what I'm going to do. And that is so much exactly not the point. See, because the reality is in the deepest need of a person, I cannot make a difference. You cannot make a difference, but God can. And therefore, what people need is not so much you, although your love is certainly very important. It is what God has placed inside of you. It is authority. And I think much, much gets stolen from us in this regard. See, one of the greatest enemies that we face is fear. Am I going to fail? Am I not going to make it? Am I good enough? Is God with me? Is God not with me? And we have this constant, barrage of thoughts. Just go, I don't know. But you know, the point is never you. The point is what God wants to do in that situation. And is it not funny that it takes a little boy with the story of the 5,000 and 4,000 that gets fed. It's a little boy with a couple of loaves and a couple of fishes to really show up the disciples who all try to develop a very elaborate MBA plan of how to feed the 5,000. Jesus says, "You feed them," and they're like, "Yes, like it." You know? And there we go. We draw up our business plan. Got it all together. You know, and structure is important. Infrastructure is important. Working through stuff is important. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying those things are not important, don't get me wrong. But it's just that we tend to rely so much on what we can do instead of what God can do. You know, and often the best thing you can do is to pray for somebody. And it seems that when we say you can pray for somebody, it seems like what we're actually saying, "I have nothing else for you. So I'm just going to leave you my token prayer." Bye. And I think much is stolen from us. Because Jesus here does astounding things and people look at him and say, "What authority does this guy have?" In the first place, when he taught, he didn't teach like the other rabbis. The other rabbis would say, "Well, Rabbi, this and this, Hillel and Gamaliel and Shammai, they said this, therefore I say this, therefore I agree." Jesus pitches up and says, "But I say unto you." They're like, "Who's this guy? He speaks, but he speaks of authority that makes so much sense. When he speaks, it's like a world opens up and I can clearly see what is in front of me and it makes sense. When he heals of authority. Miracles happen. When he casts out demons, he casts out demons and that's it. Great power. Great ability. Great clarity about what he does. I want to say to you, of course, we can never be Jesus. But equally, we should not forget that we can be like Jesus. So what was Jesus' secret? And I think if we can go to that last verse again. Just go to the next slide. I just want to read that again. Because I think that is the secret. In the early morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went away to a secluded place and was praying there. Simon and his companions searched for him. They found him and said to him, "Everyone is looking for you." He said to them, "Let us go somewhere else to the towns nearby so that I may preach there also. For that is where I came from." And he went into their synagogues throughout all Galilee, preaching and casting out the demons. Let's just go to the next slide and then keep it there. Alright. Very surprising what Jesus does here. And I really think it's a key for us to understand when we talk about authority. Two things. Now in my mind, what I probably immediately would have done, and I don't think I'm very different from many other people, if I have that sort of impact, I would stay with those people. I mean, he withdrew himself to a secluded place. I mean, what is that about? I mean, you've got a thing going here. I mean, what's the story? Go to where the people are. Go and talk to them. Go and heal them. Go and do all kinds of stuff. Why does he withdraw himself to a secluded place? And then, to top it up, he goes to a different town. You see, that is very counterintuitive to me. Does that make sense? You know, like the Afrikaans saying, "Slani eiset kwel hy warm is." You know? What is the synagogue? Central. Yeah. Where people were. What is the synagogue in that time? Synagogue, interesting enough, at that time, later on we know that it's a building as well. I think one of the earliest synagogues that they had was actually in Galilee itself, in Gamla. There was a built synagogue in a very specific form. They had a seat of Moses in front where you can sit down and read the Torah. Interesting enough, it was sort of the type of a stone chair that was carved out. Jesus talks about sitting in the seat of Moses. If you might remember that phrase in the rest of the Gospels, that was actually a place. But the synagogue in general, sorry, I'm interrupting my thought because I do think that's important. The synagogue, when we think about it, we think of a religious place, where people come together, read the law of Moses or the law of God in those days. So we might think a synagogue is, in our terms, a church. Going to church and doing amazing stuff there. Now here's the thing. In that time, the synagogue, more accurately, was a civil gathering. People would come to the synagogue for a couple of reasons. They would come for judgments. Okay, this guy took my chicken, I want my chicken back. So let's sort this out with the elders. It was for civil announcements. Alright, this is what we need to change about the town, this is what's going to happen in the next famine. The other thing that they obviously did was religious functions, coming together on the Sabbath, reading. And I think their society was far more integrated than our society in the sense that we separate politics, economics, religion. In those days, they did not separate anything. All these things came together. And I think what is interesting to us then is Jesus exactly came to where people then gathered, whether it be political, economic, or religious. But I think the point that I'm trying to make is that Jesus didn't stay with one town where it was really cooking. It was really happening for his ministry. He went on. And I think that is interesting to me because in my mind, I would have said, you stay where you're getting reaction. You remain where it's going well, if I can almost put that that way. So what is there for us to learn here? And I think there's two things for us to learn here. The first thing for us to learn is that we, when we want authority in our lives, we should understand whom we serve. Now that sounds like a very simple thing, but actually in life I find it's a complex thing to always understand whom we serve. See, Jesus had a very good understanding, even though he was God in himself, he had a very good idea that he was there to serve the will of the Father. He was there to serve the purposes of God, the purposes of God the Father. And if you can understand that, that is that is a very good step in terms of having authority, because whose authority is at the end of the day? It is God's authority. It's God who gives that authority. It reminds me of George Whitfield, when he had the idea, he had the revelation that he must preach. He was in a gathering and somebody said, "The world has yet to see what God can do through a man wholly devoted to him." And then George Whitfield stood up. He was quite a bold man. He stood up and said, "I am that man." Now, on the one hand, people say, "Oh, that is not God. That's this guy's story." But on the other hand, I really appreciate that. Because he said, "I'm the guy willing to serve God. Not my own purposes, not my own ambitions. I'm here to serve God." And you know what? I think that still stands true. The world is yet to see what God can do through a man holding the God to him. See, because authority is not something you can fake. You can't go like, "I have authority. I'm going to speak King James Bible. Thus saith God." And then I have a, no. You can't fake it. No, you can't pretend it. It is something that is given, something that is not given. Authority is bestowed. It is earned in a certain sense. And authority comes from understanding who you serve. And Jesus had a very good understanding. That is why he went to a secluded place and he prayed. Now, I think sometimes our prayer lives, we see it too devotional. In a sense that we see it as a conversation between me and God concerning my life. And that's also very important. But equally, we should understand that prayer is speaking to the King of Kings. God, what do you want? What do you want for me today? What do you want for my life? Very important. The second thing that we notice here from Jesus is his sense of purpose. Why was he here? And he understood that his calling was not to be the main man in Capernaum. His calling was to move on and to touch many people in many villages. The whole of Israel. He had a very good understanding of why he was there. And obviously we know what his mission was and what he did. My question to you is, do you understand why you're here? Not just in general in life, because that's a daunting question, right? Why are you here? And I mail you. Very daunting question. Start with small things. Why do I have this job kind of job? What am I supposed to do? Why am I in this family? What am I supposed to do? And just ask God. Just ask God, and he will show you that. It might take a while, it might be instantaneous, you might already know. But a sense of purpose in life is very important. I think so easily we just go from one Sunday to the next, one month to the next, one year to the next, and life sort of slips us by without understanding what am I doing here, and why is that important. Right, let me just then, we're going to close off in prayer. Thanks so much for coming this morning.